You are listening to Kilometer Zero by The Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app where fun is fast.
George Bennett is a New Zealander who has been with Jumbo Visma since 2015, when the Dutch team was Lotto NL Jumbo and at a pretty low ebb. He and they have developed in tandem since then, his team of which Bennett was part dominating this year's Tour de France, until that extraordinary time trial on the penultimate day when Tadej Pogacar snatched the race from Primoz Roglic. Bennett wasn't at his best at the Tour, and we'll hear why, but before the Tour he was absolutely flying. He won the Italian one-day race Grand Piemonte, and then he was second to Jakob Fuglsang at Il Lombardia. I was curious whether this meant he had resolved the long-standing health issue that's bothered him, a stitch, or a side stitch as he calls it. As he told us in an episode of Kilometer Zero during last year's Vuelta, he was having surgery in the winter to try and rectify the problem.
I could show you, but it doesn't really work on podcasts, but I've basically got like three broken ribs. Like, you can do a self-destruction.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Like, there,
like a... Oh, yeah. The ribs are actually... I can see them moving.
And then I've got one on that side.
How long has that been the case?
Well, I don't know. I could have even been born like that, or it could have been broken in rugby. Because I've had this for like 11 years or 10. As long as I've been like a good bike racer, I remember this problem.
Did you not know that you had the broken ribs?
Well, I thought they were... I don't know if they... I don't know technically if they're broken or that... What's actually happened is they're not broken, but I mean... So people... Obviously, this is the wrong kind of medium to be lifting my shirt up and popping my ribs around. But we'll try to describe it. So basically all your ribs on most people are connected. So if you touch your sternum, go down, they're connected, and then at the bottom two, they're floating ribs. I have two that have broken free, I say. Not even ribs, it's the cartilage at that stage, the rib ends. And it can be described as something called, like, some people have it like slipping rib syndrome, and basically what happens is the ribs just, when you breathe deeply and move, the ribs just click over each other, and there's a nerve trapped under there that just gets... absolutely smashed. So as you breathe deeply, which is when I get the stitch, you know, after 15-20 minutes of going really hard, you just get this stabbing pain, and it's like, so many times I stop because the stitch is too bad. Every now and then I can push on if I'm in some super motivated, super optimistic mindset. I can, you know, you can, but then, you know, it affects everything. You don't train as you train differently because you don't want to bring it on. You race differently, you go, okay, I better back off here because otherwise I'm going to... And you end up pushing a massive gear as well because, like, you try and keep your breathing down and just let your legs do the work.
Now Bennett is preparing to start the Vuelta a España as part of a Jumbo-Visma team that is without question the strongest in the race. As well as Bennett and Roglic, there's Tom Dumoulin, Sepp Kuss and Robert Hessink, who all rode the Tour. I caught up with Bennett on the eve of the race. You crashed on day one at the Tour, didn't you? Did that kind of... Because you were in such great form coming into the race.
Yeah, no, that really put me on my ass. I crashed twice quite hard on day one. Especially the first crash, which was about 30k to go. And then crashed again, I think 3k to go or something. So, I broke a rib. It was a lot of damage at first, you know, shoulder and... feet and all this stuff, but the one that sort of lingered was a broken rib. But it wasn't really the pain of a broken rib. I mean, it's annoying, but it's not that bad. But it's just more the effect. It just, you know, all your energy goes into healing it, and already the next day I could just, you know, I felt great on day one, and then day two already on cold ears I just had sort of this empty feeling, which just continued throughout basically the whole tour. I mean, I had a few days where I could sort of pull it together, but, you know, you just weren't recovering day to day. And then, you know, just the inflammation, the weight that goes on, that, you know, when the body swells up to try to protect itself. And there's all sorts of things. And it just turned into a, you know, and also we had a huge workload. So there was never a chance to recover. It wasn't like the flat days were easy or something. We were in the front and the wind and all the stuff. So, yeah, it was a bit of a slog, really.
That must be massively frustrating because you were in such terrific form going into the race.
Yeah, oh man, it was super frustrating. But after about 10 days, I just sort of came to peace with it and said, right, I've just got to, you know, you can still do a good job and still be a really useful rider. I mean, you know, you went from maybe climbing with the best 5 or 10 guys to climbing with the best 25 guys. So you're not useless. You're not in the gruppetto every day, but you know, so you can still sort of contribute. And you know, I think we were very fortunate that we had such a strong team that I wasn't really missed, which is good. At least in the, you know, in the part where I needed to be there, you know, going into the tour, the last sort of climb, last bit. I mean, we had Sepp and Tom and Walt, which made, you know, which meant I could do my work a bit earlier and just save one of those guys, sort of reshuffle the order a little bit, and it didn't really affect the team in the end. So we got away with it, but yeah, it was massively frustrating. I built the whole year around the tour, and then it all goes down in a bloody steaming heap on day one. So
I think that the people learned a lot more about the effect of crashes on riders and their form this year at the tour after that sort of carnage of day one. Yeah,
it was. I mean, you look at even the guys that crashed, even in the Dauphiné, they never came good. I mean, Bernal never came back with back injuries, and then you had, you know, Buchmann, you had, who else? There's a lot of guys that crashed and never looked good again. I'm trying to think.
Well, even Roglic. I mean, you know, he came very close to winning the tour, but there was a sort of sense that, I don't know, not that he was holding back, but that he was kind of looking out, trying to look after himself pretty well.
For sure, in the first week, that was a little bit the case, but he still won a stage in the first week. So, I mean, he was very good in the tour, I think. I think numerically, he was at his best. But yeah, there was a few guys like that that just, I mean, Pino crashed day one and then never came right. Bardet also, you saw him crash. It's just some strange reaction. And I remember talking to Woodsy about it during the talk, because I was just, you know, having one of those days where I was just so over it, getting dropped by guys that, you know, haven't been dropped by all year. Just being so frustrated. I was talking to him about it. The same thing happened to him last year. He was flying, crashed on the day, I think the Ghent one, broke his ribs. And he never, ever came right, because it's just not a chance to recover. So that's one of the daunting things about a Grand Tour, you know. It's like...
everything's got to go right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if it happens early on, it's a bit sort of daunting, knowing, okay, I've got 3 weeks of this to get through before I can let my body recover.
And how did you cope or deal with the disappointment on the second last day?
Yeah, it was disappointing for sure. I mean, man, you know, it was a bit emotional. We were at the top of the hill. It was just, everyone was tired. You know, obviously there's a little bit of emotion there. But by the time we got back to the hotel, we had a long transfer. We got back to the hotel, had a big beer, that big glass of Leffe that night, and sort of, you know, we all just sort of accepted, like, actually we rode the perfect tour. You know, we checked everything we wanted to do, which was to start the time trial at least on the same time, if not a minute ahead, which was we were, and we were just beaten by a better performance. We never had something go wrong with Primoz. We were always there. We were always at the front of the race, everything like that. Everyone rode well, and we sort of just accepted, like, okay, well, we actually just got beaten. You know, I think it would have been heartbreaking if his chain had broken and he crashed or something, you know, and then it had been really robbed from us, but it was just that we were beaten by a better rider, stronger guy. I mean, that time trial performance was, you know, maybe the best thing anyone from our generation's seen, you know, to pull back that time on Primoz and to put a minute into him. To win by a minute, all that stuff is just such a strong ride that you can't really be disappointed, can you?
Well, I mean, Roglic, I'm sure Roglic was disappointed, but he's bounced back admirably. You know, just sort of got on with it. A lot of guys would have struggled, I think, mentally, but he seems to be very strong mentally. And you know, Liège-Bastogne-Liège isn't the same, but I think a lot of neutrals were happy for him to win that.
Yeah. I was sitting here on the TV, sitting here at home on the couch watching it on TV, and I think, you know, they got a noise complaint screaming at the TV. I think everyone, you know, was super happy to see it. And, you know, I think there's just a good vibe around it. You know, you saw Tom again selling out for him. You see, you know, like in the tour, it was, you know, just as, I think they've just managed to achieve this this group of riders of, you know, essentially leaders, you know, especially amongst the climbing group and Welt, that are happy to sacrifice their personal results for each other. Whereas before, when you sort of created these, for lack of a better word, sort of super teams or whatever, then, you know, there's always a bit of internal friction and everyone kind of wants to be the leader and tries to flick the other co-captains and things like that. And I think now there's, you know, they've created this, for the moment, a very harmonious team. And so we sort of have, you know, sort of proud of what we achieve in a way. And then I think that helps, like, pre-miles go, okay, right, the boys are riding for me again, let's get up and give it everything. And by all accounts, heading into the Vuelta, you know, everyone's motivated, everyone's excited about it, and we're sending a very similar core group of guys.
Well, it's an incredibly strong team that you're sending. Sort of same again. I don't know what are you thinking going into the race?
Oh, I haven't thought too much about it personally in terms of, you know, I've been focusing on my own bloody path back to some kind of form. And but yeah, of course, Primoz is number one. Tom's also number one A. And then, you know, I think it'd be good to give Sepp a run as well. I mean, I know he's still really, really going well. And it's a perfect course for him, actually. It's not, you know, time trial dominated. Although the time trial will be decisive, it won't be everything. And he doesn't mind, you know, he's better when it's a bit cooler. So, you know, it'd be good to see. And you know, I think, yeah, I don't know if we need to do like we did in the tour where we just control the race and sort of suffocate it. And yeah, I just don't know if everyone has that in them again, you know, for another 3 weeks. I mean, that was one of the most taxing things you can ever do. And we had the power to do it, but I don't know if we have the power to do it twice. So it's just hard to know. I mean, I don't know. We'll get there and we'll have a talk about it and figure it out. And obviously, I hate the cliche, but every day will be, you know, we'll take it on its merits and go, right, okay, do we need to control it today, or do we just take today and go, all right, stuff it, someone else can do it. And if the break wins by 15 minutes, and they win by 15 minutes, and, you know, there's other people that are trying to win this race, not just us. So we'll see how that goes on each day. And but yeah, I mean, the domestiques we're losing, we're, you know, from the tour team, we don't have Walt and Tony and Armand, but we do bring in Jonas, who's a super good, you know, on his day, he's one of the, you know, nearly one Poland. And you got Armand, and you've got Lenny and Paul Martin. So it's still big engines. So we're, you know, there'll be definitely be some onus on us to do some of the work.
You are listening to Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app that turns indoor riding into a game. Explore endless roads, race riders from all over the world, and boost your fitness with monthly training plans and structured workouts. Join the world's training playground where fun is fast. Go to Zwift.com and start your free trial.
Hi, I'm Edvald Boasenhagen, and I'm riding for NTT Pro Cycling. With Zwift, I think it's just, I'm not the guy that chats and speak too much when I'm riding, but it's nice to actually see other people and, you know, they do the same work as I do. And yeah, you can have some competitions on the sprints and KOMs, which is nice at times. And also it's inspiring just to see so many other people riding there. But the best thing, I think, is just that it feels like you are riding outside with the resistance on the home trainers and things like that. It makes it a lot better than just put on a movie and ride the steady, like the old trainers or like you used to do.
I was going to ask you, George, as well about your own. I spoke to you at the Vuelta last year, and you were, you know, heading off for surgery on your torso to try and rectify the problem that you've had with the side stitch. It looks, well, you've been in great form. I mean, did that have the desired effect?
Not really, no.
Oh dear.
So it's still been giving me a bit of grief. So that's been super disappointing, actually. But I'm just trying to sort of get on with it. And I mean, you know, it's that time of year where you start, right, okay, you got a bit of time off, back to the drawing board. So we're talking to some more guys, and we've also talked to the surgeon, and I guess it has improved slightly. So I don't know if it's, you know, and it could just be scar tissue. It could be, who knows? I don't know.
Well, it didn't hold you back in those Italian races before.
Yeah, I mean, it was hurting like hell.
Right.
But, you know.
If the form's there, I guess, you can overcome anything.
By nature, it hurts, doesn't it? So, I mean, some days you can deal with it better than others. You know, when you're really up for it, you can suffer through it, and to a large extent. And when you're a little bit off and your head's not quite in it, then it really gets to you, and then it blows you completely out the ass. So, honestly, at the moment, I'm just trying to put it out of my head.
And, well, sorry for bringing it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I guess the other cloud is COVID. You'll be watching the Giro, no doubt. Does that weigh on your mind as well? You know, the kind of threat to the racing, or do you just have to exclude that as well?
Oh man, that's another one that's sort of in the back of your mind, because I have been really good with it. You know, I had just gone, right, regardless of what I think, let's train for the Vuelta like it's on, because if you don't get ready for it and it is on, you're in trouble. You know, you show up there and you're half-assed, and you know, on this team now, you just can't do that. So I sort of was able to really put it out of my head, and you know, and just go, okay, the Vuelta's on. What's happened in the last 24 hours here? I live in Andorra, and down in, I'm actually just doing a little block down in Girona, just to avoid the snow and actually do a bit of time trial stuff. New restrictions are coming in, and it's all the bars and things are closing again, and actually in an hour or two is when they turn off. As you can probably hear the screaming, it's a school below me, close the door. They're not closed. They're not closing yet. But,
yeah.
There's these new measures coming in, which suddenly brings it to the front of your mind again. You see the Giro, you see all the stuff, and you start to think a little bit like, okay, logistically this is starting to sort of affect my life here. But on the other hand, you can go, right, well, maybe being in a bubble in the Vuelta is the best place to be. And I know that if it's like the Tour, I mean, ASO, if it's not hard to find too much criticism about some of the things they do, of course, but on the other hand, you've got to give them credit for their bubble. I mean, it looks at least like a tighter ship than the RCS bubble, and the stories I've heard talking to the Mitchelton boys that were home on the bus. I've got faith in the ASO bubble that we'll get. I mean, maybe we don't go into Madrid just out of, you know, I mean, Madrid is really one of the worst places in Spain, but you know, I think we'll have a Vuelta that represents a winner of Grand Tour. And the thing is, for me, what's interesting about this Vuelta is the fact that it's like a reverse Grand Tour. So already we should pretty much know the winner on the stage 13 time trial. I mean, you have the first week stacked with difficulties, already the clean stage on stage 6. And then, yeah, stage 13 is the time trial, and then it's just sort of breakaway sprint. I think you do have La Colativa, but with the exception of that, it's really like a reverse Grand Tour. So, I think we can have a Vuelta and race to the point where we see a real winner. It's really, I guess what's playing on our minds more than, you know, okay, we're looking at a lockdown here, but, you know, we're also on this strange time, or this strange decision where, like, we want to go home to New Zealand at some point in the off-season. I mean, normally my off-season would have started a few days ago and at Lombardy or something, and then, you know, we have a month here, and then we go to New Zealand and see the family and friends that we haven't seen for a year. But this year we just don't know if we can do it, and because there's a 2-week hotel quarantine and there's all these obstacles around that, getting back, what racing's on down there is down under on, and there's all these things that that you don't want to think about because you've got the Vuelta in a few days, but they are there and they are things that, that do need a bit of attention because, you know, if you're going home to New Zealand, you need to book your space in quarantine, you need to work out if there's flights going, there's all these sorts of complications that are somewhat distracting, but I mean, at the moment, I'm just sort of ignoring them.
I think everyone wants to go to New Zealand.
it surely just follows social, like, distancing parameters. I mean, if they lock it down, then the virus goes down. If they let it run, it runs.
Yeah.
And I guess at least what here they've been doing, they've been trying to just sort of like limp it through until there's a widely distributed vaccine. But we heard first reports that October, November might have had a vaccine, and December saw it sort of start to be circulated, but I think that was maybe very optimistic before they ran into a few road bumps and now it's strange.
From a cycling point of view, it's been fantastic that, you know, racing has, it's the only sport that really looks like it usually does. You know, there are fewer crowds, but apart from that, it looks pretty normal, which is a great thing for cycling, I think.
But that's why I think, like, you know, I get annoyed when I hear these stories out of the Giro that, you know, they're staying in hotels with other people and all this stuff, because what that does is, like, for example, next year, Vuelta Catalunya, they look at that and they go, oh, well, look what happened in the Giro, we can't run. That's irresponsible to run a race. And no cyclist wants to be part of spreading the virus, of you know, being in this travelling circus of infection. But when you look at the Tour, we all got away with no cases. And then people looked at that and went, okay, well, we're going to have a bike race. So next year, a race like Vuelta Catalunya.
Yeah.
So you want as many good examples of bike races to happen as possible to encourage other bike races to continue.
Yeah, it can be done, but only with the right sort of measures in place. Yeah.
Yeah, and you really, clearly, you just need those measures because otherwise, yeah, you end up in this crazy situation where there's, you know, two teams at home, and or Paris-Nice last year when teams just go, oh, well, we're not going to go. And then I think there was, you know, five or six teams that didn't go to Paris-Nice.